over these months of the campaign, or has it been years or an eternity, how many of us have muttered at the radio, at the television, the computer screen, miserable, unrepeatable things? How often have we too wondered what meaning hope could have in these days? How often have we sought to hide our hearts, protect them from the weight of this difficult and broken world, with its wars and its floods, and the way it seems insistent on reducing the story of human life to the results of the latest poll? Over these months, these years, this eternity, perhaps you too have gone out to get the newspaper, only to immediately recycle all but the coupons and the comics. Perhaps you too have sat across from your friends or your partners and even your children, and each of you with your own electronic device, playing games or flipping through Facebook, finding ways to numb and distract yourselves from the pain you each carry. The stories of your days, the words that were said to you, the words you have said, the absence of the intimacy you deeply long for. Perhaps you too have watched more reality television, played more words with friends, eaten more of your children's Halloween candy, made more of a ritual out of beer and potato chips, done all of these or maybe others like them more than you'd like to admit. Perhaps you too have done all you could to keep this world and its heartbreak at bay. Let's just say it. Living in this world with an open heart can be exhausting, and sometimes it can be terrible. Living in this world with the faith that not only can love overcome all hate and pain and suffering, but that it will, feels so often incompatible with remaining informed. Feels so often incompatible with paying attention. Feels so often so risky and dangerous and even foolish. Living with an open heart in a battleground state, especially foolish. Such an accurate description, right? More so than swing state. No, we're a battleground. A battleground where our common humanity is the casualty. Our sense of vision is what we lose. Our sense of common purpose, our sense of trust in our neighbors, especially those with a different yard sign than ours, our faith in our common goodness, our willingness to hope. Hope, like fear, begins in the imagination. Hope, like fear, is a possible response to what we experience in the present as it relates to what we can imagine about the future. So when we experience today, in the present, life's goodness and joy, we may choose to hope or fear about whether this goodness will continue and perhaps even grow in the future. Or when we experience in the present life's brokenness and the darkness surrounds us today, we may also meet this brokenness with either hope or fear. It's a choice we have. Hope or fear. Trust or anxiety, faith, or cynicism. We all have a choice, and it is a choice we make every day with our lives. Rational, reasonable people might support either choice. There is much evidence to support either position. Now, 250 years ago, a man named Thomas Potter faced such a choice. Now, for those of you who were at Buckhorn, I can see a few of you here were. You might remember I told a version of the story I'm about to tell there. It's another on my list of the top 10 stories I feel like all Unitarian Universalists should know. And so even if you heard it at Buckhorn, it's okay. It's an important one, so it bears repeating. About 250 years ago, in one of the places hardest hit by the storm last week, actually, the shores of what would become New Jersey, on those same shores, Thomas Potter, a farmer, and what today we would call a religious seeker, was spending a lot of time thinking about some very big questions. The nature of life, this question of hope, and most of all, whether or not love would have the final word for us all, which in his day was a matter of whether or not hell existed and what determined whether or not you'd end up there. In his search for answers, Thomas Potter stumbled upon the ideas of universalism and its hopeful claim that a loving God would never send God's people to hell, and that instead all, and really truly all, would be reconciled in love. It was a very hopeful message for his time. Unfortunately for him, however, in 1770 America, there wasn't yet a universalist church, and there weren't any universalist ministers. And so Thomas Potter's deep longing to hear a message of hope and to be a part of a community that embodied that message, it remained unfulfilled. And then one day, the story goes, as Thomas Potter worked in his fields, he heard a voice in his heart, in his head. I don't know. The story just goes, he heard a voice. And so the voice said, if you build a chapel, a universalist minister will come. I know, everybody laughed in the first service too, and I found out later it's because I forgot it. This echoes a movie line, right? But this is how the story goes. The voice said, build the chapel and a universalist minister will come. And that minister will bring a story of hope to all who follow. And so Thomas Potter decided right then and there to build a chapel near his farmhouse. He built it, and then he just waited for that minister to come. Well, lo and behold, at about the same time that Thomas Potter was building his chapel, a young minister named John Murray was making his way across the Atlantic Ocean. John Murray was a one-time Methodist minister, but he had converted to Universalism, which then led him to being cast out as a heretic. John Murray was also a man who had recently lost his young wife and his child, and in a great tragedy. So he'd lost his faith, his pulpit, his wife, his child. And so this experience of brokenness led him to decide to give up altogether on preaching, to give up on faith and religion altogether, and just start over, head to the new world. Specifically, he imagined starting over in what is today New York. But as John Murray's boat got close to shore, the winds picked up, and instead his boat went aground on the coast of New Jersey, coincidentally right near the fields where Thomas Potter had built his chapel. So seeking shelter and help, John Murray went towards the farmhouse where he met up with Thomas Potter. And before long, Potter discovered Murray's background in ministry and what he sensed was their shared belief in this gospel of hope. You can just see the light bulbs going off in Potter's head at this point, right? Well, maybe not light bulbs because it was 1770 after all, but you get the idea. Just imagine how excited Potter was as he told Murray about his chapel and his vision that he'd had about a minister arriving to preach this message of hope. You just hear him going, okay, so I heard this voice and I built this chapel and you are the minister. And Murray was like, you're crazy. No, really. I mean, John Murray had decided he was done with preaching, remember? Done with the idea of hope. Life was not a blessing. It was terrible and broken. And he wanted to go get lost in the wilderness. But Potter didn't give up easily. And so the two men decided to strike a deal. If Murray's ship was still stuck the coming Sunday, that is, if the wind didn't change and allow him to head up to New York, then Murray would preach in Potter's chapel. Well, lucky for us today, the wind did not change. And so on that Sunday, September 30th, 1770, Murray preached a sermon on Universalism in Potter's chapel to Thomas Potter and to all his family and neighbors. It was the first known Universalist sermon on American soil. And today, John Murray is considered the founder of Universalism in America. Today, we are the grateful inheritors of Thomas Potter's vision. Grateful inheritors of Thomas Potter's choice to keep hope alive, to create a place for it, a literal meeting house for it, to kindle the flame of hope in his time so that it might be here for us in ours. And we are the grateful inheritors of the ways that Thomas Potter greeted John Murray and all his pain with love and vision, and reminded him of the power of hope to transform even the deepest heartbreak. We stand here today keepers of this story, guardians of this tradition, stewards of this message of love, so that 250 years from now, I know I can barely imagine it, but just think, 250 years from now, good people like us will receive the gifts of our broad vision and continue to take up the mantle as love's people. Love's people. That's what the Reverend Justin Schroeder calls us Unitarian Universalists. Okay, so Justin's parents were not in the first service. Are they here? This is what happens when you're the parent of a Unitarian Universalist minister. If you don't come to church, then everybody finds out. Okay. So somebody's going to have to pass along to Rick and to Marianne that I've been listening to his podcast, Justin's, and I think he's a rock star, which is important for everyone here to take in, not just Justin's parents. Because Justin grew up here in this church. And this child who grew up in this church, well, now he's out there now. And he's a senior minister in a large, vibrant Unitarian Universalist church in Minneapolis, kindling a bright flame of hope. And I'm not overstating it. I think he's a rock star. I'm going to run into him one day, and y'all are going to embarrass me and tell him I said this. But it's true. Go listen to his podcast. And it makes me wonder what the kids who are in our religious education classes today, what they're going to bring to the world. Anyway, so yes, Justin calls us love's people. And as love's people, we stand together making this choice, whatever life might bring, to meet it with love, to greet it with hope. Give them not hell, but hope. That's what John Murray said. Give them not hell, but hope. That's our choice, and that's our story. Now, if you hadn't guessed, today's service is a collaboration with our stewardship team. And I wouldn't blame you if you hadn't guessed. Because in many congregations, stewardship is basically a code word for the annual pledge campaign, right? And the committee's charged with raising funds to support the church budget, and everyone kind of avoids getting near them because it's like they have a very painful, very contagious disease, and everybody does this. Well, that's not our stewardship committee. This committee is regularly sponsoring classes on things like intentional giving, paying bills online, the basics of insurance, and identity theft prevention. Because this stewardship committee wants to help us think about what money means, how we get it, how we spend it, what that has to do with our values, and what we believe about the world. All this same stewardship committee sponsored a service where rather than collecting money, they handed it out. Some of you might have been there, right? And then they invited creative and thoughtful ways for that money to go to worthy causes and encouraged you to find ways for it to multiply. So they handed out about $400 in $2 bills in that service. And then your creative responses resulted in nearly $4,000 going to local nonprofits to further our values in the world. So knowing all this, it didn't really surprise me when that same stewardship committee, they heard this reading from Victoria Safford that Aaron read for us and said, now that is the reading that we want for the stewardship service. Never mind that it was in a book about Unitarian Universalism and social justice. The stewardship committee believes they're actually quite passionate about and are ready to lead us all in the belief and practice of stewardship, not as a discrete action that you take as part of the church, but stewardship as the church. Stewardship, not as raising money, not about funding a budget. Those are outcomes of stewardship for sure, but not stewardship itself. Our friends on this inspiring and faith-filled committee are inviting us to learn that stewardship is about keeping alive this story of hope. It is about tending to the world we cannot yet see in full, but we do gain glimpses of it in the abundant gifts of the everyday. Stewardship is about taking life's abundant blessings and claiming them as all of our shared destiny. Stewardship is not a discrete action you take in the church. It is the church. Which is why in this stewardship service, the committee wanted to lift up the work of the ESL tutoring program, as here is one way that we, members of this congregation tend the story of hope. With our time, with our financial giving, with our faith, here is one way that we bring love to bear on the world's struggles. One way we mend the world's attempts to divide us into categories, immigrants, natives, speakers of one language or another. One way instead we proclaim the story of our unity, proclaim the story of our mutual needs and vulnerability, the ways we can learn from each other, the ways we can serve each other, the ways, as the African proverb goes, I am because we are. And the ESL tutoring program is just one of the many ways that we, the members of Foothills Unitarian Church, are stewards of this story of hope. Our faith family hospitality ministry, where we host homeless families in our church, that is another. The memorial last Saturday for our beloved friend Rick Gamina, that afternoon, we were stewards for one another of a story of hope in the face of heartbreak. And last Sunday, if you were here, that powerful service of story and song, exploring El Día de los Muertos and the meaning of life and death, the lighting of candles and the announcement of the big gift we made to the food bank. And later that day, the same sanctuary filled with laughter and lit up pumpkins. All of these are ways we are keepers of this story of love, the story of standing for the common good, for compassion and caring, laughter and joy, and the bright thread of hope. There are 1,000 examples. The Brotherhood, the Mums, the Spirit Films, the OWL program, the youth group, Theology on Tap, the women's giving group, the joy and generosity that filled this exact space last night at the auction, the meals we bring to ill church members, the dinner circles we share, serving each other coffee on Sunday, greeting each other at the door, the children's and the adult choir, the ways we allow the Spirit to make its way through this space, and the way we invite the Spirit into our willing and weary hearts. I'm leaving out more than I've listed, not the least because I've barely begun to know it all. And still, when we talk about being stewards of hope, let us not give the impression that we mean only in the official ministries of the church. For surely our church becomes most powerful when it makes its way into our everyday lives, when our faith becomes the way we live, when we claim ourselves as stewards of hope, stewards of love, love's people. This is the choice that we come here to be reminded of, the choice we come here to help each other make, because it's not easy, so that when we turn, we too find ourselves, maybe even in the next 48 hours, confusing pragmatism with cynicism, and turning all too often to the numbing power of beer and potato chips, or whatever it is that we might turn to in our lives to keep heartbreak at bay. We know we can count on our friends in this community to say to us, what kind of self-indulgent whining is this? In the kindest possible way, of course. We bear witness to each other, this alternative story, an alternative to the story of division and separation and greed and self-interest that so often attempts to claim us. We, the people of Foothills Unitarian Church in Fort Collins, Colorado, at the end of 2012, in this place called a battleground, in this life that can feel so often like a battleground, we come here to this place of hope and we kindle this flame, this story of binding the broken, comforting the world, healing this brokenness with the promise of blessing. We kindle this story of light and we carry it into all the places of darkness. We kindle this story of hope and heart into all the highways and byways in our homes and in our lives. We stoke this story with our lives. We make sure it doesn't ever go out, and then we pass it on. May it be so. Amen.